Highway 40, Wednesday, September 21, 2011. Call and roll.
Committee Chair Weisler.
Here.
Director Hannah.
Here.
Director Saldana.
Here.
We have a forum.
So the first item is the approval of the minutes from our meeting of July 20th. If you had a chance to look that over, if you have, I would entertain a motion to approve those minutes.
Motion to approve the minutes as written for July 20th.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is carried. The minutes are approved. So our second order of business here is an overview of potential areas of focus for this committee. I've had the opportunity to speak with staff a little bit and bounce some ideas around, and I think begin to narrow the focus a little bit. Rocco will, I think, give us an overview of some of the discussions, and really what we want to do is take time with our committee members here to, you know, get into a further discussion.
All right, how do I get?
Click on it. Click on it. Just, you're off the wrong, you're using the clicker for the presentation.
High tech. All right, perfect. All right, well, thank you. Can I use the screen?
Well, you can click up here to change the screen.
Oh, okay. As usual, can't really figure out the clickers, so I am consistent. So we're going to give a recap today of some of the potential areas of focus, as the director said. I'd like to keep this you know, free-flowing and get some thoughts and feedback. These are some of the primary work items that we'll be focusing on over the next really year and a half or so. I'll go into a little bit of details on each one. We'll talk about some of our non-fold or free ramp movements, talk about some of the environmental and sustainability policies, our other policies, traffic noise, cost-sharing policy, air interchange policy, some other strategic discussions regarding congestion pricing, how we use our land and evaluate the use of our land, some of the multimodal planning and freight accommodations, and a little bit long-term, and iterative a little bit, the signage policy. We'll be talking about that, and also some of the innovative financing options moving forward. So kind of a little details about what the work plan is going to entail really in the next 6 months for this committee. One of the earlier items that we'll start working on is really to look at the ramps on our system. There's some that are non-pole ramps on our system. Some of them are true free movements. Others are just non-pole movements.
Non-tolled ramps.
Non-tolled, yeah.
But
non-tolled.
People pay a toll somewhere on the system before they can get on and off again.
Yes and no. So we have it's a combination of both.
Right.
A few where they could get on and get off.
There are
That's
some.
That's the free movement.
Those are the free.
Right.
And then there are other ones that are non-tolled ramps where you get on. At one point in case where this kind of comes up is we built a new interchange at Interstate 88 and Neola Road. Few miles to the east there, maybe 4 miles to the east, there's a ramp at Interstate 88 and Route 59. You can get on and off in all directions on Route 59 annually without having to pay a toll, but you'll pay a toll downstream at either a mainline toll plaza or when you get off. Where the interchange at Interstate 88 and Neola Road, all directions are tolled. So it's kind of a maybe an equity issue, trying to balance it out a little bit to make sure what, you know, the goal is really to spread traffic around, make sure that we don't overburden one element of our system, which 88 and 59 is a prime example of an extremely congested roadway on both 59 and 88, and sometimes we do have backups onto the main line. So this might be a way to kind of spread the traffic around. So we do have both free movements and non-tolled ramps. There are a few of them across the system. So we'll focus on some of those. Give you a presentation about where these locations are, and maybe just start talking about ways to address that moving forward. Environmental and sustainability policy. Right now, the policy that we have for environmental, it's really capital focused, and it focuses on how we implement our capital projects in compliance with federal and state regulations. But something to think about now that we've engaged a strategic advisory team. We've had some discussions here at the board level about the environment and the importance of the environment. So maybe now we take this to the next level, the environmental sustainability policy, not just for capital projects, but for agency-wide, so incorporating some how we approach maintenance, how we approach operations of our system. This room is another example of what we've done from an environmental standpoint. If you don't know, the lights in here, they adjust to the background light. Something that we tried as a little demonstration project. So these are things that we've
experimented. Sunlight.
The sunlight, yeah. The light. So anyway, things like that. How should we proceed as an agency to consider sustainability in everything that we do, beyond just the capital? And again, these are things that really to start focusing on in the next 6 months as we begin to make some of these investments in both capital and our other infrastructure. Traffic noise policies, you will see as we move forward with our capital program, traffic noise will become an issue. It's historically been a main discussion point with a lot of the communities along the all of our capital projects, actually going out to some sites today. So anyway, we've got a policy that's in place right now. What I think would be helpful is to look back to see how decisions were made on the current policy and to see how we might go about changing the policy or keep it in place right now. Some things specifically, we've offered cost share to municipalities for noise abatement. Just want to make sure that we've got a policy that is consistent with the board's vision, the financing of our capital plan, and really up to date. There has been some updates with the Illinois Department of Transportation's traffic noise policy, so it's a matter of do we want to be in line with them or do we want to continue to have something a little bit different that gives us different levels of flexibility.
And there are federal guidelines as well.
There are federal guidelines. Basically, the federal guidelines defer it back over to the state to say you create your own policies. There are no specific. Everybody has something different.
Right.
So the policy that we have right now is really kind of created on best practices across the U.S. The policy we adopted, I believe it was in the late 2004, just prior to the kickoff of the previous capital program.
Okay.
So it'll be a worthwhile endeavor to go back and look at this because, as you'll see, that will be an issue that we'll be facing, especially on the Interstate 90 corridor. Other cost share policies would be good for consideration and updates. As I said, noise wall is one. Aesthetics, you know, we get a lot of requests to add landscaping onto our system or to do aesthetic treatments on structures, on whether it be retaining walls, noise walls, or bridges. How do we want to approach cost sharing policies there? For bridges, you know, I think we had a couple of agreements on the Finance and Administration Committee about cost sharing. How do we anticipate seeing payback on this? Is it a policy we want to continue? Bike and pedestrians, as we go in and do more capital investments, we've got opportunities to accommodate bikes and pedestrians on our projects, which is a good thing. Again, thinking how we approach cost share with that, as well as transit moving forward. We have typically addressed these on a project-by-project basis, so what might be good here is to formally adopt a cost-sharing policy based on what we've learned over the last 5 years. The interchange policy, the presentation just immediately following this about an interchange, we've had the policy in place since 2007. I think it's been very effective at actually delivering a lot of projects, providing clear guidance to communities and agencies desirous of implementing a project. Prior to that, all we did was say, here's the technical requirements for an interchange. Our policy now lays out very clear financing requirements, so that has been good. But now that we've implemented, I believe it's four projects already under this policy, maybe it's worth looking back to see, okay, what has worked and what hasn't worked, and how do we look at future projects moving forward and prioritizing projects. We've got some requests, as you'll see in the next presentation, where they're completely new interchanges, where there is no access right now. Some of them are currently partial interchanges, only going in one direction. So how do we approach those projects moving forward? The project I'm going to talk about next is a partial. Also looking at some of the operational improvements we do invest in our own interchanges, just to do some modifications and enhancements. One I like to always reference is a Interstate 88 at Farnsworth, right near Director Wisner, by the community there. It was an operational improvement that provided some benefits. It was a project that we, the tollway, solely funded because it did provide benefits for us, but then there was also the rollout benefits for the Farnsworth, the crossroad, the community road. But, and again, one of the other things that I think we heard as we proceeded with our public hearings and our capital planning forums prior to that, how should we start looking at some of the equity considerations? We've got a cost share policy that says everybody's going to be, you know, tollway's contribution is 50% at a max, and we expect the other contribution coming from the local communities. How do we, should we start looking at that for some of those underserved or impoverished type communities who won't have that money, but how do we provide some economic benefits and access into those communities who truly need it? And then also in some of the rural conditions, rural areas of our system, where we don't have access right now, the rural areas would be very unlikely that they would meet the financing requirements based on toll revenues, just because the traffic is not there. So how do we approach some of those projects moving forward and prioritizing them? Congestion pricing, we've got a lot of work going on with the Federal Highway Administration right now, our I-90 Corridor Planning Council. We've done some work with the with CMAP and Metropolitan Planning Council on congestion pricing. So it would be worthwhile to review some of the prior and ongoing studies to really guide future investments and policies here at the tollway.
Just one comment that occurred to me. And one of the things is that we have to make sure we, in connection with all of these different policy issues, we tie it back also to sustainability. Because sustainability is an issue with interchanges, it's an issue with, you know, rural or underserved areas. We have to be careful how we also, you know, maintain a sustainable system.
Sustainable environmentally,
financially, and all that.
Right.
And I was thinking more environmentally as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm all for infill development opposed to.
Right. And I think that that's why environmental and sustainability policy is something that is overarching across
all of the
tollway. And as you said, maybe contemplated individually in each of these policies, but something that is
an
overarching,
right,
you know, set of priorities and goals. Yeah. Agreed.
Right, and that was the vision that I had for made environmental policy was a simple policy statement to really kind of guide what we should do, maybe not to, you know, guide our goals and recommendations moving forward. And that was one of the things that we've already put out there, is everything that we should do should have an environmental sustainability, yeah,
right,
goals or reduction recommendations. So that pricing, land use and right of way. We've got a lot of land. We're a major landowner in Illinois. We have a significant amount of right-of-way, green space, infield areas. Let's look at our existing land. This is, you know, maybe in the 6 to 12 month time frame. So once we get our capital program kind of off the ground, let's look a little further out of what we could do to maximize the utility of our land, identifying what parcels of land are available for possible use, and looking at how to leverage our land to enhance economic development, whether it be for some renewable energy projects, using the infield areas to maybe generate some income, or whatever it might be, or generate some type of energy, whether it be through solar, thermal.
Have we ever looked about where we condemn, where we buy the land for a new interchange? Doing a private-public purchase of the land, saying, because what happens is the landowner right across the street makes all the money because they put a gas station there, they put a 7-Eleven there, whatever. Have we ever considered either, do we buy land, pieces of land big enough that we could
have development rights or something?
Development rights with it, and so it could be partly paid, our purchase price of the land could be partly paid by a private company who gets the opportunity to develop.
That's one of the things we're thinking about in this area. It's certainly when you hear things like value capture, which is something that's been raised before, that some of that is the, whether it gets to some of those points where you have increased value for property, but then some ideas around public-private partnerships are, you know, not necessarily the private entity partnering to actually build, like, the roadway, for instance, but having, you know, some development rights on parcels that are adjacent that that will benefit in collecting fees or revenues that help support the infrastructure ultimately.
Right. It's so, a huge cost to us,
right.
And it's right
mm-hmm.
to the bottom line.
I think the other part of this that I think is potentially interesting and has some impact is, you know, as we look to put new access or interchanges in, for instance, or even just widen or expand roadways where there is some flexibility, you know, it's not necessarily in an area that's already developed, how are we working with local communities on zoning and, you know, making sure that that land that's adjacent, for instance, we always have to build noise walls when there are houses right on our roadway. So, you know, is it residential use, is it commercial use, you know, how are we making sure that we're working with local communities to anticipate those things that actually can be an added cost to us as well, ultimately.
And I was also thinking about like large intermodal facilities,
mm-hmm.
just because that's kind of in the back of my mind, and I'm not real familiar with the geography around like the large intermodal facilities in Will County, and whether at some point we make kind of interchanges available and somebody's making a lot of money off of those, a private developer is making a lot of money. And I know that we also have it in Harvey, we have the Canadian National who's getting ready to invest in making a large intermodal facility, and that those are going to be additional trucks
mm-hmm.
going in and off of
the tollway system.
The tollway system.
Right.
So, anyway, just something to...
So something about also the partnership with intermodal
some of those
facilities.
And, yeah. We are a large interchange with all the railroads and highways.
Yeah.
Well, and along those same times, and with the cost of the land, Rocco, I mean, the larger parcel you buy,
mm-hmm.
the cheaper it is, and if we can control some of that, there's probably, I mean, you'll pay huge dollars for the ramp to be right next to the ramp that comes down. And we don't want to be a developer, but on the other hand, being a land, owning and selling, flipping land
mm-hmm.
is a good practice.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if we are constrained under our state statute in terms of
that would be one of the factors to consider.
Yeah.
How much we can buy.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And how much excess we can hold. Right.
Right.
But I think it's still worthwhile for us. You know, it's becoming more common. You know, those thinking about whether it be I don't want to describe it as value capture because it's not really necessarily that, but a public-private partnership where there's some development rights with an adjacent parcel of land and that ultimately, you know, leverages additional capital for the infrastructure. Those are becoming more common, you know, globally
right.
and even nationally, and something that we maybe should look
yeah,
at.
Yeah, we should look at.
That's maybe a way to look right at it into the interchange policy, because we're in
right.
for,
no, exactly.
we recover
right.
our cost, and so how is the local recovering their cost, and is it through those?
Right.
And it can either be a land flip, or you can say we're going to bid on this land, because anybody that wants to participate in that bid with us.
Yeah. It will. You know, there will be a lot of complicated issues and questions to work through with it. But I thought we think it's valuable to start contemplating that.
And I think typically in the interchange situation, local entities have been more or less expected to do the acquisition. Is that a general rule or not?
No.
No.
It's been gone,
it's
gone both ways.
Yeah.
The policy's been in since 2007. That's why I think it's worthwhile to go back
mm-hmm.
and kind of look and see
yeah.
what's worked. With the Eola Road, it was the village went and acquired the land. 294 at Balmoral, Rosemont acquired the land.
Right.
With this 9047 interchange we're going to be talking about next, we're the lead on acquiring the land, and we've got the condemnation ability, so that's kind of what, if we want to deliver
mm-hmm.
a project quicker, that's something that you need to look at.
Well, this is a good one to maybe explore
mm-hmm.
some options.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So there's a lot to learn from. We've got a few interchange projects in place right now. I think the policy's worked well, but how can we make it better?
And best practices from across the country.
Yeah,
right.
We need to be innovative.
Yeah.
The whole world needs to be innovative right now.
We came up with that interchange policy. There really was nothing to draw upon. It was something that we created. I don't know. Multimodal planning is another thing to look at. How do we integrate transit? And all of our projects, how do we use our roadway, our right-of-way, whether it be through some park-and-ride facilities, you know, that's another way of using right-of-way, providing access ramps just for transit, you know, those are possibilities, or combining that with
But we don't necessarily mean just transit here, we're truly multimodal, so discussing freight,
yeah.
rail, and commercial.
Whatever it might be. I do have freight next. So, and you know, additional partnership opportunities to be looked at. Freight planning, I think this is big. You know, I dedicated a full slide to this because this is huge for us. Not just for us, it's big for the entire region. Things that we need to look at is what can we do to enhance the movement of freight on the tollway? There's a lot of trucks. We absolutely rely on trucks. Trucks rely on us. We've got a big relationship. I-80 is the number one commercial. I-80-294 is the number one commercial corridor in the entire United States. I-90 is the largest interstate in the United States. We are an integral part of freight movement, no doubt about it. So what can we do to make it a little bit easier? We've talked about commercial parking expansion in the past. We hear that quite a bit, and we see some problem areas on our system today.
Truck parking.
Actually, congesting pricing for the trucks actually probably makes more sense for the common user. I mean,
well, we have overnight pricing, or have had overnight pricing for trucks. So I think thinking about congestion pricing and where people have seen it actually work for which customer populations, I think would be a valuable mm-hmm. part of the congestion yeah. pricing study for sure.
Yeah,
right, absolutely. With parking expansion, we see trucks parked on our ramps. Now, that is not a good situation for us or them. So how can we provide some additional amenities through there? Looking at routing, you know, we've got some, we're doing what we can to make things a little bit easier for them to get, obtain permits for overweights, better coordination between tollway and IDOT, so an online permit application, believe it or not, it's still paper-based, but we're getting away from that very, very, very soon. Looking at what can we do to assist with commercial routing, whether it be providing some onboard messaging to the trucking community, how do we really get information to the logistic and freight providers? Let's really kind of hone in on that. I've talked with, I have been kind of the point person with the trucking community for the last couple of years, and so it's a matter of getting ourselves together to see what we can do to help them move more efficiently. And then also the intermodal planning is something that we definitely need to really start thinking about. It's truck-to-truck and truck-to-rail type planning. How do we really start integrating that into everything that we do? So a little bit further out, maybe the 12-month plus time frame we'll start looking at. And we've got some things going on right now with our signage policy. We've got a blue board pilot program. This will be more of an ongoing effort. We've got a blue board pilot program that's been out there for a while right now. We'll be coming, providing some updates on that existing program and providing some recommendations to you shortly. Looking at other attraction signage on our system and guide signs. This is a request that we receive quite a bit. Some people want a question?
I'll keep going. No, I do in a minute. But
And then to the last point, other things that we need to think about is the innovative financing strategies that you were bringing up earlier. What can we do to leverage both public and private resources to finance and advance our projects and these bigger regional projects? Things to look at, as the director was saying, value capture. How, you know, do we want to get involved with additional federal grants? There's some funding that may be available out there. How do we want to engage the private investment community in some of these projects? And I honestly do think, as you'll see on the next presentation, we do have an excellent P3 relationship right now. It's the public-public partnership that we have with some of these public communities. We have delivered a lot of projects under that P3 arrangement. So how can we develop more public agency partnerships to deliver these projects? And any other financing strategies, greater minds than mine. So that's kind of looking for the next, 12 months, things that we'll have to start discussing. Again, looking back on what the successes have been and how we move forward. So some of the other things that will be more of an ongoing, and this actually starts tying into the next item on the agenda, council updates. We've got some ongoing councils. Right now, our I-90 corridor planning council, we've had several meetings with that council. We're going to be breaking back into a working group, getting into some technical discussions in mid-October, and then going back to the full planning council probably sometime in late October to continue looking at what we do, not just on the tollways perspective, but also on really connecting that Wisconsin to Chicago corridor. So we're going to really hone in on our system and how we tie into the IDOT system to the east of ours.
What's the timeline for that council in terms of the work?
Well, originally we were going to be completed in August, but the council members have said that they're interested in continuing.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly wanted to have you know, some guidance and feedback, particularly on Jane Addams
mm-hmm.
and the Jane Addams portion, but obviously 90, and this was actually something that was broadly discussed in that first meeting, you know, they wanted to really deal with the entire 90 corridor, not just focusing on the Jane Addams portion. So they want to continue their work, and I think that we'll be, you know, continuing that. I don't know that we've established a new end date
mm-hmm.
at this point.
It's very, honestly, as somebody who's worked on this corridor for a long time and looking at these issues, it's encouraging to see that there's that much of an interest to
continue
the work of this group, because it really has been now, we really need to solve these problems, which has been, it's been a nice change
mm-hmm.
To really see that everybody in the room is trying to come up with a consolidated vision on what should happen. So as long as that's working well, good. And they're big problems to solve.
Before we go into these updates, though, should we just take a break? Let's take a break and talk about the work plan.
Right, right.
And whether there's, you know, whether it be kind of changes in when we consider things or additions or things you want to make sure are contemplated under any of these categories.
Rocky, can we go back to the first slide?
There
you
did
the
first one.
Yeah. The
strategic
schedule.
Oh, okay.
The chart.
You got that one?
Slide 2.
Are you working that one, Nancy, or is that me?
There
you go.
You know I'm not good with the clicker. That one.
So are there any thoughts about that?
I guess I just want to question how you why the priorities the way they are. I mean, and I'm assuming that kind of fits in also with our...
I'd say investments right now. I mean, we're getting ready to make some decisions regarding what we're going to be doing from the capital projects, and as we move forward with design of these projects, I-90 being the one right there at the forefront, and starting with the Elgin O'Hare projects, we really need to make some decisions on what we're going to be doing as far as environmental initiatives and also noise. We will be starting some community outreach with the local communities very soon, and these are issues that we'll have to discuss with them in the next 6 months. Say, here's what our policy is, here's what we've had, here's what our policy is. If you want to cost share on any of these items, now is your opportunity to do these things. So those first few are the ones that I said we need to probably tackle those right off the bat. The non-toll ramp review, I think that's just a critical item from an agency standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Revenue capture.
To start really looking at that. And especially
traffic flow.
The interchange, the next group of the 6 to 12 months, we've got a policy right now. The next item, item number 3 on today's, we're talking about the next new interchange. We'll have a little bit of a lag time before the next one really starts coming up, so thought that was something that we could tackle a little bit later. Congestion pricing. As we move forward with our work with the I-90 Corridor Planning Council and our Federal Highway Administration grant, we'll learn more about congestion pricing and the opportunities there. Land use and right-of-way evaluation. Thought that one's something that what we need to do is understand exactly what land we own right now. So that's going to take some time, is really laying it out and mapping out what we have. That might even push a little bit further, but I want to keep that as a major consideration.
Right, we should be able to, though, start talking about, you know, our policies in the 6 to 12 month period, and it's timely because we're going to be doing some additional acquisition and taking on new projects,
right.
But we won't be so far down the path on that. Particularly, you know, the Elgin O'Hare project is where I can see significant potential acquisition.
Yeah, within the first 1 to 6 months, as far as the committee, I mean, I pick up there's a revenue opportunities, revenue earning opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Non-toll revenue earning opportunities.
Yes. I know I have some ideas, and some of them even become toll, because you're talking about congestion pricing, and some become tollway opportunities as well, just additional revenue earning opportunities. And I think the innovative financing options is months 1 through 12, because it undermines all of these things, really.
Right. As you get into land use, and we're talking about some of these other things, you're right, we're going to be discussing innovative financing along across a lot of these different categories.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any other thoughts on
anything else?
No. Lots when we get into the specific.
Yeah.
Right, right.
And, you know, by no means is this a lengthy timeframe period.
Right.
No, it's short, but it's, but, yeah.
Twelve months or so.
This is a lot to bite off, but.
It is a lot, actually.
I think we'll be busy staff, we know we'll be very busy. And the truth of the matter is, in some of these items, we may look at them and say, we don't really need to change.
Right.
But on others, we may spend considerable time.
Right.
If you're not gonna move forward, so, I think it's pretty ambitious, and I appreciate the staff's cooperation to get work in. The next item on the agenda, then, a little more detail on advisory councils and federally funded studies, and,
If you go back to the presentation, Nancy, I'm all confused.
Slide nine of the presentation is the second to last slide, yeah.
Can you, just, before you get there, Rocco, could you, where you have sign policy, could you put sign policy slash, Oasis? Not that they're necessarily one of the same, but.
Why don't we, should we just create an Oasis category, because there are a lot of things having to do with the Oasis that are.
That are non-signage, too.
Right.
I think we, yeah, and I think we need to.
Yeah, like customer service, or, yeah.
Yeah, it would be here.
Okay.
Because we do have transit requests at certain Oasis, that's possibly.
We've got truck, transit, truck.
Yeah, maybe.
Truck parking.
Parking, et cetera.
Okay, that's a good addition, I agree.
Sorry about that. Sorry, Director.
No, that was actually included in the original summary for, I thought, for the committee.
I thought that it, yeah, I thought it was, too, I'm not sure how it, but that was a good, it's a good catch, we'll add it in. It's no one's fault.
Gotta get out of a little bit of work.
Don't wanna think about the Oasis anymore. They created a lot of spring damage, so.
Right.
Right.
There's such opportunities there.
This is, I'm gonna go to this one, just so I have my, on the council updates. So I-90 corridor planning council, we already provided the update on that. Illinois 53 Blue Ribbon Advisory Council, I don't know if you wanna give that, or, we had our first meeting on, September, well, I believe that's what it was, September 12th, 2 weeks ago. It's kind of the kickoff of the, advisory council, well attended, that's for sure. The first meeting was really kind of getting everybody, providing a base level of information for everybody. The next meeting is October 17th. We'll provide, make sure that you have information on when that, when those meetings are held. They're gonna all be held at the same, location up in Lake County. We're actually putting together a whole agenda of when all of the meetings will be held on that, when the next meeting will start, really talking about some of the, opportunities for what the roadway, what a road.